Hey, this is Joe Hollow with the Baylor Lariat Sports Podcast. I'm hanging out with Brian Bateman and Nick Dean. We're talking sports, starting off the 09, right?
Right,
Brian, how are we starting off the 09?
Oh, we're starting it off great. It's our first podcast of the year. We got a lot of stuff to talk about. No more football, at least for a little while, until recruiting comes up in a couple of weeks.
But
that's okay, because we got a couple basketball things to talk about, and a little baseball and softball. So we're going to start off with men's basketball. Let's take a look so far at what's happened, I guess, in the beginning of conference. We got Texas Tech. Baylor won pretty well. A&M, not as good of a performance on the road. And then Oklahoma State, which you saw kind of a...
came down to the wire.
Right, came down to the wire, and you had a little bit of, showing both sides of old Baylor and new Baylor. So I guess first thing we have to talk about, something that seems to be a pervading theme for this whole year so far in Big 12 play, has been rebounding. Joe, you want to start and talk about what you saw so far?
I just watched the Texas A&M game, and it was just blatantly, clearly obvious that we were getting dominated on the boards. Just the big men down low didn't seem to be able to block out, and if they were able to block out, that's all they'd do, and then they weren't coming up with the rebounds that they needed. And I feel like it cost Baylor the game.
Right, definitely. And another thing along with that, with the rebounds, was, at the end of the game, Baylor only ended up having one less rebound. But the big thing was that A&M was just getting, they were actually converting when they got the rebounds. It wasn't, go down and shoot up real quick. And they were getting, I think they were actually shooting less than 25% on the first shot. But they would get rebound, be able to get points out of that. So that was definitely huge. And
had a lot of turnovers that game, too, if I recall.
Right, that's true. Yeah.
Wasn't the best effort I've seen.
And definitely kind of showing like an old Baylor from, say, last year or something. And then, of course, we had Oklahoma State. Now, pretty, crazy game. Their beginning down 17 and a little schizophrenic there. Shaw Baylor down 17. All of a sudden, they're up by 8, and then they throw it away to this kid, Randy Page. Keaton Page, who a freshman, he really took it to him. So, I mean, what do you see there from Baylor? Like, it seems like we're seeing a little bit of both. What, Nick, did you see there?
I think it's who we put in. I think that there are different combinations that will definitely show you who they're strongest against. And also it's just when they feel like playing sometimes. You can just kind of tell when they're out there playing and they notice they're 17 down, it seems like they finally come in and do it.
Right. Actually, in interviews yesterday, exactly right. That's what Kevin Rogers said. There's something about it when he almost his exact quote was something like, when we look up at the scoreboard and we see we're down 10, then all of a sudden something clicks in us and we start playing harder, which I don't. It's obviously a problem there that they're not playing.
You mentioned old Baylor, new Baylor. I think that's some of the old Baylor mindset where they might be used to playing. They're more comfortable playing from behind because that's what they're used to, and so. But at the same time, they have all this talent, all these skills, so they are able to come back. But it's more like they're uncomfortable when they have a lead, or even when they're in the game close. They're going to have to get to the point where they're playing well consistently throughout the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely think it's a lack of like follow through, because you can see we have a lot of blocks, but not a lot of rebounds, because when we block it, we don't take it all the way back to conversion. So I think that's a problem. Also, whenever we follow through with having a point lead, we don't follow through all the way, and then we come back down, and then we come back up again. And so it's kind of like an influx of points. And I think that if they got comfortable playing enough, we would be steady enough with enough people that we would just be able to go ahead and take some more games.
Right. Another big part of that, Quincy Acey getting the start in place of either Josh Lomers, who got the start against Texas Tech, or Mohamed Gian, who got the start against A&M. Two guys who have, been maligned a little bit at times, but they did not see the floor at all against Oklahoma State. So, granted, Oklahoma State is a little smaller, but what do y'all see about this? I mean, do you think this is going to be an issue down the line?
I hope it's a motivating factor. I think that that's a sign that something isn't right, and that if they want more time, then there are things that they can do to get themselves that. So I hope it's a motivating factor.
I think you have to weigh, like, not having a big man versus having the big man's mistakes. Like, and versus OSU, because they were smaller, we were able to not put them in, and therefore we didn't have the mistakes, so we can make it up pretty fast. But I feel like in the big games, when we do have big people, they make some crucial mistakes that we have to lag behind for even longer time, so it's even more on the crux of winning or not.
How many times have you seen a ball go through Mamadou's hands into just...
Quite a few, unfortunately, but yeah. And the thing, though, about, you know, just Oklahoma State, you know, granted they were a lot faster, and so we needed to have, you know, X number of guards on the floor, but at the same time, they were able to slash and get straight to the rim every single time. There was nobody there that was able to stand up and block them. So I think that, you know, even if we had played a bigger guy, that would have, you know, there probably would not have been a 17-point deficit, because, you know, they wouldn't be able to get all the way up there all the time.
The defense is something that they harped on all offseason, mm-hmm. too. And so far this, at least through conference play, I haven't seen so many, they haven't reaped so many benefits from that.
They're actually, their margin is about the same as it was last year, 1 point difference between them so far. Anyway, moving on to what's coming up this week and this weekend. Wednesday, playing Kansas State on the road. Then they go to Norman, play OU, and then they come back and play Texas here. So
rough stretch of games.
Right. So Kansas State here, 0-3, or Kansas State on the road, 0-3. You know, that's
warm up for the big guns.
All right, but I guess what I'm looking at is here. What could possibly happen? You know, if Baylor does choke and drop this game, what does that mean for the Bears?
It's still early, but you have to think that would be pretty deflating. Maybe it would serve as I just talked about motivation. Maybe that would be even more motivation for them to kind of avenge their loss against OU in Texas. I don't know what they need. They need something, though.
Right, definitely. And you know, if you look at it, OSU was a close win. If they do, you know, Kansas State is a possibility loss, but if they were to lose at Kansas State, then that's five games in a row they could have possibly lost in a row. Which, you know, it's great that they won against Oklahoma State, but you got to really look and say, you know, when are these guys, like you're saying, going to be able to put the hammer in?
When are they going to get it that they just have to, like...
Because, yeah, OU and Texas are no flukes. Blake Griffin is definitely one of the better players in the nation. Anyway, so that's men's basketball. Do y'all have anything else you want to say just about what you've seen so far, what you expect to see?
I just hope it gets better.
Right, yeah. Well, I mean, at least we can say that it's better than a couple of years ago, but they definitely, they have some work to do, and I think Scott Drew would agree completely. Moving on now to maybe the more, what appears to have the more potential of the two squads, women's basketball, coached by Kim Mulkey. So they're ranked number 5 right now in the nation.
Indeed.
So, Joe, you want to talk us through what you've seen the last couple games?
Well, they're still ranked number 5. They didn't move up after they just knocked off two top 25 teams, Iowa State and Oklahoma State. Iowa State was number 20, and OSU is 22 in the nation. They're still ranked 5. Danielle Wilson has been nothing short of amazing underneath the glass for the Lady Bears. She's been solid, has led them in points for a good majority of their conference games. She didn't lead points in the last one, but before that, the previous two, I know she has. She's improved a lot since last year.
So. Definitely. Last year, you know, she was still trying to find her spot in the role, and granted, there were a lot of injuries, so they had to figure out where she was going to play and everything out of position. But still, yeah, definite improvement. Would you say that she's probably one of the better, best, I guess you could say, best improvements in the conference?
Not just one of the best improvements, but in post-game news conferences, I've heard coaches on both sides say that she's playing about as good as basketball as anybody is in the entire nation right now. It's just amazing to watch what she's doing underneath the glass.
Right, and especially on defense. If you want to talk about, obviously against Oklahoma State, they had pretty solid performance, pretty great performance.
She's in addition to putting up a lot of points, she's bringing down rebounds, she's blocking shots, she's just doing it all.
Right, definitely. Now, I've noticed that that Jasmine Player and Jessica Morrow and her and then Rachel Allison, you have this nucleus of really three or four players that are in at any given time that are really pretty good. And it seems that I've noticed, at least in college, maybe not so much in pros, but if you have three really good players, then you've got a good shot at the Final Four.
Not just their starters, even. They have, I mean, those players you mentioned certainly are the nucleus of the team. But even people they bring off the bench have just been doing amazing. In the OSU game, until the final 2 minutes of the game when Kim Mulkey put all her freshmen on the court in throwaway time, everybody that she had put into the game had at least 2 points. So they're getting it from all angles. And I wouldn't want to play them right now.
Right, that's definitely true.
I think that that's what's like putting the motivation behind it, because when you have your core players that can play well, that's nice. But when you can take them out and give them rest and put in people who can still score points, that's what's going to make the difference between a top team and a bottom team. Because we can sit out people and let them rest for a while and bring them back in, and those points are still being scored. I think that's what's going to keep us afloat.
All right, definitely. And I guess looking forward a little ways, it's a little early to start talking about tournament, but do you think this team could be 1, 2, or 3 seed?
Most definitely. They really could. It is awful early. There's a lot of basketball yet to be played, but if they play to their potential, there's nothing stopping them. So
definitely. So, yeah, they got that going on. I have a pretty good feeling that it's going to be a good. If they get a good draw, they could make it back to the Final Four and possibly national championship again. But moving on, they got Texas A&M and Texas Tech both on the road. A&M, as we've seen for the men, is a tough place to play, especially when you got a tough team like the Texas A&M Lady Aggies. I believe they call them Lady Aggies. I'm not sure. Aggies, something like that.
I think
like
they're
that.
Just Aggies.
Okay.
All
right.
They're all Aggies down there. Well, they're ranked number 9 in the nation. It's going to be one of the best tests that the Lady Bears have seen thus far and probably will see throughout the season. I mean, earlier, I think back in November, they knocked off number 2 Stanford, but that was at home. This is the first away game where the Lady Bears are going to take on a ranked opponent, so it's going to be a really good test of just how good they are.
Right, definitely two good defenses as well, being able to play there pretty strong.
Yeah.
That's what they were known for last year, at least. So moving on, Texas Tech, they're improving.
They're improving, but I'm still going to call a Lady Bears win that one.
Right.
Even though it is in Lubbock, and just the other day I was talking with Jasmine Player, and she mentioned Tech and OU and A&M is the three toughest places to play. So,
right. Kind of far, too, to drive out there, everything. All right, well, that's pretty much it for the women's basketball. I guess we'll move on real quick to talk about onto the diamond. There's not a lot of news to report. We got baseball practice starting soon. Softball practice started on Monday. If we want to, and baseball, actually, they just got ranked. Depending on which poll you follow, we are between 8 and 19 in the nation. What do y'all think? Do you think 8, 19, we're in that range, would you rank them?
Well, I think that we have a lot of people coming back, and I just talked to Smith today, and he was talking about the rankings, and he says they're like that, really varying, just because coaches aren't really in those polls. The only one that's coming out there is coaches is ESPN. That should be coming out soon, but he feels like they have to get out and play. He's not going by rankings, really, but I really think that they could live up to 8 if they really wanted to. We have a lot of starters coming back, and so I really think they can live up to 8. We'll see. On February 20th when they start, but I think the rankings are just like that because it's so opinionated between the people who actually make them.
Mm-hmm. Right, definitely got a good pitching staff coming back too, so that'll be something to look forward to. Now softball, obviously 2 years ago, great story, they made it to the College World Series. That was 2 years ago, and last year a little struggling, and now they're picked 6th in the Big 12, so that's, I think there was a 10. Is it 9 or 10 teams in the
10.
10. So that's, that's about where they are just based on their last season. But they got a big group of freshmen coming in. This Whitney Canyon is one of the ones that's supposed to be a really good pitcher. I believe she was locally to Midway or someplace really close, and she was a very good pitcher there.
Well, if you exclude last year's football, not this past year, but the 07-08 football team, I think that Baylor teams have a tendency to do better than most people pick them to. So
I also think they're placing them there because they don't really know where they're going to go. I think they probably see potential, but they don't want to call it too early. So I think it's a smart place, but I have faith that they can move up.
Right, yeah, you never really know until they actually get out there and start playing, which they start against Florida, which is probably going to be a number one, number two, and number three team in the nation on February 6th. So that should be a good test for them right off the
bat.
Get
the big test out early. Mm-hmm.
All right, well, that's all for our Lariat podcast today. Thank y'all very much for listening, and we'll be back next week with some more insight on Baylor Athletics.